Hello, St. Pete. I'm Jules Warren with Radio St. Pete 96.7. You're listening to my podcast, The St. Pete Jewels with Jules, where we take a behind-the-scenes look at our community's treasures. Today, we are going on a field trip to the James Museum in downtown St. Pete. We are going to experience an extraordinary exhibit that just opened called Edward S. Curtis, Photographer of His Time. This landmark exhibit offers a rare look into Edward Curtis's lifelong dedication to photographing our Native American Indians and includes a special portrait gallery installation focused on the individuals who inspired Curtis throughout his career. The exhibit opened on November 8th and runs through March 29th, 2026. And here's the best part. The curator of this outstanding exhibit, Caitlin Pendola, is going to give us a behind-the-scenes look at what it takes to put together a show of this latitude and will take us through the various elements of the exhibit. All right, everyone, are you ready? Let's head to the James Museum and meet curator Caitlin Pendola. To start, she's going to give us a little history on Edward S. Curtis, the photographer. Let's talk about the Edward S. Curtis, Photographer of His Time exhibit, which is here at the James Museum, and you were one of the curators. So it opens November 8th, and it runs through March 29th, 2026. And the exhibit features 160 pieces, and some of the key elements are the Curtis and content, Curtis contemporaries, the powerful portraits, and living legacy. What can you tell us about the different elements of the exhibit?
Sure. The exhibit really asks the viewer to take this sort of journey in time, I like to say, with us from roughly 1900 to approximately 1930. And I've always been so fascinated with how art movements can be understood as almost like a mirror, and they reflect the cultural attitudes of the time, what people valued, what they were of the time. Edward Curtis, the photographer featured in this exhibition, he was working on a single project called the North American Indian for 30 years. This was during a tumultuous period. A lot changed. So this exhibition is exploring how his artwork shifted alongside the sort of cultural movements that were happening, and places him in context with the art movements of the period.
Very interesting. And yes, he did it his entire life. So he did go through different periods of time in America, growth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cultural changes.
Yes, like when he started, it was during amidst the Industrial Revolution. People were in general very optimistic about America and this belief in American exceptionalism. By the time he ended, he was bankrupt, divorced,
depressed.
The nation had just gone through World War I. Everyone was mad, traumatized, disillusioned. A lot changed. And his artwork shifted alongside those changes.
And an important heartfelt incentive of this exhibit is the portrait installation. You were telling me shifts the attention to the individuals, also called the sitters, who helped shape Curtis's vision. You have called it a major undertaking of our team. Tell us where the interest came from to put in the extensive research and effort to this area of Curtis's artistic journey.
Yes. Massive undertaking is a good way to put it. Shout out to Ernest Gendron. He's a colleague of mine here at the James. He is the manager of adult learning, but he co-curated this installation with me, this portrait installation with me. And, you know, it started as this sort of small idea, and it just kept growing. And what we really wanted to accomplish was a sense of how many thousands of people participated on the North American Indian. That's Edward Curtis's big epic project. There are 84 portraits in this installation, and it's one person, one portrait per tribe that Curtis visited. 84 is just a fraction of the amount of people who had a hand in this undertaking. With this installation, we are really trying to showcase their agency and emphasize realize that these people were active participants and collaborators on this project. They had a hand in it. We really want to highlight their individualism. For some of the people, we know who they are, and we did a lot of research into them and finding out more about them, more information. We were able to contact some descendants of theirs, which was really special, and get anecdotes about them. Some people, we learned who they were through this process, and then some we still do not know who they are, but for those, we wrote something. So when you go into the installation, there will be books in there. There will be something written about each of the 84 people. We've also turned it into a crowdsourcing project, or almost like research initiative, because we're asking, for those we don't know about, we're asking the public to help us identify them. I think it's really special. This is going to be an ongoing project for years. It does not begin and end with this show. This is something that we'll be working on for a long time, to identify not only the people in this installation, but all the people that Edward Curtis photographed.
I think that makes this whole exhibit just that much more special, mm-hmm. is to try to track down, find these people that were involved with Edward Curtis, willing to help him up.
Yeah, the co-curator, Ernest, he knew somebody who worked at the National Park Service, and he reached out and he's like, I'm trying to find more about this man and this photograph. And the guy wrote back and he said, actually, that's my great-great-grandfather. So we're like, great.
Oh, wow.
Yes, we've run into a few things like that that have made it really rewarding.
And I would think it would have to be fun, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, just trying to find things out and research and a little private investigation going on.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like an investigator. I mean, it can be tedious sometimes, but mostly it has been very rewarding and fun. I look forward to continuing the work.
That show in itself is going on the road. Like you said, you're not sure where it's going to start, but it will travel, what, throughout the states?
It will travel. I mean, it would be great if it could go international. We just don't know yet where it's going to go, but the plan is to start traveling that hopefully by 2028.
I think so much of his work got lost throughout the years.
That's a good question. By the 1920s, which was the last year that he was working on the project, like I said earlier, I mean, this was after World War I. You know, I hate to say it, but kind of lost interest in Native American subject matter. It was very popular around the turn of the 20th century, early 1900s. But then everyone's, you know, by the 1920s, everyone's attention was on Europe. He really struggled with sales by the last decade that he was working. And then it just fell off. It was kind of lost. The more his work had been stored, like all the negatives were stored for decades in this basement of a rare book company. And it wasn't until the 70s that somebody kind of rediscovered him, so to say. There has been, since the 1970s, a revival and this increasing, again, interest in his work.
It's a wonderful thing to the James Museum and yourself are doing, because this photographer, this artist, Edward S. Curtis, he documented the first settlers. To this day, it's such a huge part of history.
He certainly contributed to documenting Native American cultures. He took over 40,000 photographs, more than 5,000 pages of text. Yeah,
over 10,000 recordings.
Yep, he has sound recordings, transcribed music. He transcribed languages, even. There's whole vocabularies of the native languages.
This exhibit, this absolutely stunning. It's done.
Thank you.
And I can imagine how much work is put into it. So give the listeners a behind-the-scene insight to the process of, like, organizing such a large-scale exhibit. What happens first, and how long does it take, and what elements are involved?
Gosh, we could be here all day talking about that. I've thought about that it might be good to do a program about this, actually. I guess it starts with, and I should say every museum is different. It depends on how much staff you have. Right here, it starts with your collection. I mean, you look at, typically when you do an in-house exhibition, you look at what you have first. And then you just kind of put on your creative hat. Okay, what stories can I tell with these objects?
Yeah, how can I make it interesting?
How can I make it interesting? interesting? How can I appeal to the public? How can I do something new, which is also difficult? That's how it starts, with just an idea. Then you start with the coordinate. Well, I guess first, then you have to pitch it to the rest of the team, and they have to love it too.
It has to be a democratic vote.
Yeah, right. Which requires a lot of work. I mean, you have to put together a proposal with image, you know, it's a whole, just pitching is its own art form. But then you start coordinating. So oftentimes exhibitions have loans, just like we do in this one. Sometimes not, but often they do. And loans can be very time consuming and require a lot of coordination. So you really just start trying to reach out. You find something that another museum has, or maybe a private collector, and you just start emailing and calling. I mean, it's really not as glamorous as people think.
Right. So when you say loans, you mean other artwork?
Yes. So artwork.
People are loaning you their collections so that you can add to it and make it a
correct.
bigger exhibit.
So I came up with my concept, right? But let's say I don't quite have in our collection every piece I need to tell the complete story. So then I have to fill those gaps with loans, with artwork from other places to come here to complete the story. That's when you start reaching out. You find what you need at other organizations and private collectors, and then you coordinate creating the artwork and shipping the artwork. It's a whole process. It takes a long time.
And that's just the first two steps.
Yeah, and that's just, right. So it's just endless. And then there's the exhibition design, which you had mentioned.
Meaning how you're going to arrange.
Yes, sorry.
Everything
on
the
walls. Looks in the room. Mm-hmm. That's exhibition design, which I personally hate picking out paint colors for the walls. Our other curator loves it. I hate it. It's stressful because you never really know what it's going to look like until it's up, and then it's too late. But so I hate doing that. I don't mind arranging everything though. But the exhibition design is fun because that's when you start to see your idea really come to life. Mm-hmm. And then you know, even before that, you have to start writing, and that takes a lot of work because you have the idea in your head. Putting that in that will appeal to the public, mm-hmm. and make it relatable to the public, that takes some crafting, some wordsmithing. That process is, I enjoy that because I enjoy the writing, but it can be very tedious and there's a lot of drafts. So I probably started writing this like a year ago.
So, and you're talking about what people see on the walls.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I would imagine that has to be done professionally.
And then we, you know, I write it, or whoever the curator is. So it writes the content, and then we send it to an editor just to make sure that I spelled everything right and used proper punctuation. But I love our editor, Jeannie. She's fabulous. That's just one vendor. I mean, the amount of people who work on this too, not only internally, but externally. I mean, like I just said, the copy editor, the painters that paint the walls, the people who install all this vinyl that you see, all these big photo blow up. We work with a company that does that and they come install it. There's just so many people who have a hand in these exhibitions.
Yeah, many different pieces to the puzzle.
Yeah.
And about how long does it take? I know each exhibit is different sizes, but approximately what duration of time does it take from A to Z?
Depending on the size of the scope of the exhibition, if it's, assuming it's a homegrown show, which that's what I call them, meaning it's one that our museum has developed and we're not borrowing it from somebody else. Those shows take 2 to 3 years of planning, depending on the size.
Two to three years.
I know. It's surprising even to me. And I, you know, I'm always like, I can't believe 2 years of my life has gone by working on this one thing. But then I look at Edward Curtis, who worked on one thing for 30 years.
Right.
So
there you go. Go online and buy a ticket to see the exhibit, mm-hmm. or come in.
Or just come in.
Mm-hmm. And it goes through November 8th through March 29th of 2026. For your time, Caitlin, the James Museum and the entire crew who worked on this succeeded in making this a landmark exhibit, giving the public a chance to experience the work, saying, of an American artist who documented an important part of our country's history. I'm here with you, and it's just beautifully done.
Thank you so
much. The exhibit itself, are there any other events?
Go on our website and find out more. We're doing, Ernest and I, the co-curator of the portrait installation, we're going to do a really interesting talk on that installation specifically, how it came to be, the choices we made, the curatorial practices that go into it. That'll be I think that's going to be something that people will be really interested in hearing. And then we're also doing a symposium of sorts where we're going to invite three speakers to come. So one of the descendants of the people that Curtis photographed will be here, Dr. Liz Ross, as well as Shane Bolkowicz, who is a photographer living today, and then Clay Jenkins, who is a Edward Curtis scholar. The three of them will be here, and that should be a really interesting panel discussion.
Thank you, Caitlin, for your time. Come see the exhibit, everyone, at the James Museum. It's a beautiful, beautiful exhibit on the American Indian life in America. We appreciate you talking to Radio St. Pete listeners, and we'll see you at the exhibit.
Thank you.